Welcome to Hollywood, Minnesota, the show that looks at the links between the land of 10,000 lakes and the motion picture industry. This show aims to highlight the way cinema is a part of Minnesota's artistic and cultural heritage through interviews with local filmmakers and film festival coordinators, as well as profiles of Hollywood figures with Minnesota roots. On today's edition of Hollywood, Minnesota, I will be speaking to Andrew Peterson, the executive director of Minnesota's Independent Filmmaker Project. In this interview, Peterson discusses the services provided by the IFP, as well as his involvement in the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival. Well, Andrew, thank you very much for joining me today.
Sure.
Let's start with having you describe for the audience what the Independent Filmmaker Project is and what it does.
Independent Filmmaker Project Minnesota, or IFP Minnesota, has been around for 27 years and is part of a national network of IFPs. There's one in New York, Chicago, Seattle, Phoenix, obviously Minnesota, and then our L.A. Sister organization is now called Film Independent. They put on the Independent Spirit Awards each year. We serve independent filmmakers within our own communities and partner together on other initiatives. We're here to support through a variety of means. We provide youth programs, after-school programs, in-school residencies, and summer camps for kids in Minneapolis and St. Paul in the Twin Cities area. We do traditional education. We offer over 80 courses a year taught by film industry professionals about topics like introduction to digital filmmaking or the art of the documentary interview, things that speak to topics that filmmakers need to know here. We have a lot of great film schools in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota, and this offers a further an extension of their education and something that complements it. Something that makes it very distinctive, I think, is that every course is taught by a working professional. We offer networking opportunities, screening events. We do a monthly screening event at Bryant Lake Bowl of films by Minnesota filmmakers. Each filmmaker is present for a Q&A session, so we do 10 of those a year. We do a screening series at the Walker Arts Center in January and February of Independent Spirit Award nominees. The Spirit Awards are the Independent World's Oscars. They take place in a tent on Santa Monica the afternoon before the Oscars, and often have many of the same nominees. This year, 12 Years a Slave, Nebraska, 28 Feet from Stardom were all nominated films, and those were films that we showed at the Walker in January and February. And then we offer fiscal sponsorships to programs, to projects that shoot in Twin Cities that our members make. That's a fundraising tool for people to collect donations for their projects and offer their donors. Their donors are able to write that off as a tax deduction. And then we have a master class series, which we're launching this year. Six industry leaders that we're bringing into town at various points. We're having one April 24th at the Loft with a screenwriter, director, and now author, Hannah Wire. And then May 2nd, the head of the Sundance Film Festival will be here, John Cooper, for a master class. Those are our first two of the six that will come out this year. And we're always partnering with other organizations, supporting area film festivals. We'll be participating in the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival by moderating a panel discussion about making the most of your film festival experience. We're also involved with a local film, Stay Then Go, a narrative feature film about autism that is going to be premiering at the festival, and we were a fiscal sponsor for the project, and we are sponsoring a master class they're doing with the lead actor from that film, Matt Cain. One of the most exciting things we're doing with the festival this year is that we're working with Storecast Public Art and created a dozen 3 to 5 minute documentaries about public art installations that were done in Minnesota this past year, and we'll be screening those short documentaries during the festival. That was something that was made with our youth program. We're trying to promote a culture of mentorship. So we have an experienced filmmaker that leads a team of young high school age filmmakers to create each one of these short documentaries. If that's an elevator pitch, that was a very long flight that we just traveled. Well, we do a lot of things, and that's in a nutshell.
Part of the mission of the Independent Filmmaker Project is to offer opportunities for education in the art, technology, and business of independent filmmaking. Let's take a look at each of those areas a little bit. What opportunities does the IFP offer for learning the artistic aspects of filmmaking?
Well, there's a lot of the things that I did mention speak to that. We do have specific courses. We offer them on a quarterly basis that speak to the art, and a lot of those courses do speak to the art of filmmaking, so the art of directing, of screenwriting, of lighting. We often have workshops when new technology is introduced, camera workshops and hands-on experiences that we offer that speak directly to the art of it. We sponsor screenings of films that, for our filmmaker conference this May, we are going to be presenting a series of selections from the Sundance Film Festival at the Walker Art Center. I look at screenings, that screening series and the Independent Spirit Awards screening series, as an educational opportunity about the art of filmmaking. In January, the Spirit Awards screenings includes what's called the Cassavetes Award. Therefore, it's an award given to the best film made for under $500,000. And I went to film school, and I've learned just as much, it seems, by watching those films and seeing the type of art they're able to create with those limited means. $500,000 is a lot of money, but not when you're making a movie. So they all sort of pull off a lot of little miracles. But yeah, when it comes to the art of filmmaking, whether it's the learning just the basic skills, whether that's technologically or creatively about writing or directing or actually working with the equipment, we offer courses in that on a quarterly basis, and and there are other opportunities to interact with filmmakers and learn how they do what they do.
You mentioned just a minute ago, $500,000 sounds like a lot of money, but it isn't very much when you're making a film. However, it seems to me with the advancements in technology that money goes a lot further than it did, say, 20 years ago. How has technology improved or changed the way people are making independent motion pictures?
Well, I do think the exciting thing about that is that it's put the equipment in more people's hands. When I started, it was quite expensive to make a film, and the tools to make a film were not only expensive but hard to secure. Full equipment needed to make a movie would require insurance, rentals, a truck. And now things equipment has become much more smaller, more portable, higher capacities. And for me, the most exciting part about that is how it's getting the equipment into the hands of people at a younger age, and they're able to, by the time they become 18, 19, 20, they've had quite a lot of experience in making movies. So there's that. As far as the price goes, people have always been really creative with doing this. I produced a movie in 1994 on film that we shot for $50,000. Filmmakers are always challenged to be creative, to marshal their resources, to call in every favor, and be creative in how they execute their films. Right now, certainly the big difference now is that more people are able to do that. The challenge is always telling a good story and embracing your budget. In my mind, it is always a mistake to make a film for $10,000 and try to make it look like it cost $20 million. It will never look like it. But if you make a $10,000 movie, two people in one location, and really explore them, that's when you break out and people really notice you. I mean, Blair Witch Project is a great example. Most of that film was done outside, so they didn't have to light. They didn't work with A-list name actors. They embraced their budget and were creative with it. A new recent film, Drake Dormus's film, Like Crazy, won Sundance a couple of years ago. Basically two people. There are a couple other actors. He was able to get some name actors, but, for the most part, you film it in 13 to 18 days. People get paid very little. There's always a way to do it, but the bottom line is you have to do it right. Yes, more people can do it, and it's cheaper, and people can do it, but you still need to learn how to the art of good storytelling, and I think it's really essential to embrace your budget and not look at it as an obstacle, but look at it as a way that, how can you impress people with that budget and you impress them by embracing the budget.
Filmmaking is a popular art form, and there's countless numbers of blogs and websites and magazines dedicated to all kinds of topics, but it seems to me like the business aspect of filmmaking is often underappreciated, both by the press and by newbie filmmakers. What kinds of things do incoming filmmakers need to learn about the business of filmmaking, and how does the IFP help them along?
Yeah, you know, it's a big topic. I'll say the one takeaway I'll just say is every film is a business. And it's best, I don't mean to kill people's creative sides, because you always have to keep your creative side going. But every filmmaker will be set up for success if they understand that when they're making a movie, they're running a business. And it speaks to everything about it. It's like you need to know that there's a market for it. You need to have a plan for marketing that product. You need to understand the brand that you have. So many people say, you'll understand when you see it, or I really believe in it. There's 3,000 films get submitted to Sundance every year, 120 get in. Of those 120, a small percentage actually get distribution. There's a lot of films out there, but it's a very small proportion of them that find a connection in the marketplace. And it's really important from a business perspective when you're making a movie to understand just how you fit into the marketplace. So just to make a good movie, I wish it were enough, but it really isn't. There needs to be that business mindset in there of how am I going to get it out there. I've had a lot of, oftentimes people have told me as a producer saying, my job as a producer is to get the film made. I got a budget and we got it made. And I said, that's half your job. The other half of your job is getting it seen. In my mind, you failed if you can't get it out there and you can't get an audience to see your movie. That's why we make them. And for an audience to see a movie, it has to be marketed. So you have to understand marketing. And so we do offer at IFP courses in that. We have an annual filmmaker conference that comes up every May. Quite a lot of information that's imparted on distribution, screenwriting, directing, case studies of films, pitch sessions, one-on-one sessions with industry leaders that are brought in so that you can ask them these questions. We do networking opportunities here and other events throughout the year that do speak to the business of film. We recently had an event, for instance, about legal rights for documentaries. Just because you're making a documentary, can you film anything you want? Can you include a Taco Bell sign and have it be in your documentary? Can you incorporate, if you're filming somebody driving by in the car and they have a Kelly Clarkson song playing, are you at risk with a right for that music? That session was led by Walt Lehman, who's an entertainment industry attorney, and used a case study of a local filmmaker's documentary as an example to teach from. So we take that's one example of many that we do through the year, where we talk about what is necessary from a business perspective. From another business perspective, insurance is something when you start looking at film as a business, no business opens up without insurance. None. They're not allowed to. And it's like, but there are a lot of filmmakers out there that think that that they can forego it, and that's a mistake. Especially when there are a lot of film-specific insurance policies that can be put out that you can get for as little as $250. And it's just, I bring it up, it may sound a little silly, but, for instance, if I'm going to make a movie and I'm trying to do it for cheap and I ask my parents to shoot in their house, and they say, yeah, because I'm their son. And then while we're there, somebody gets hurt. I've just put my parents at risk, and that's really irresponsible of me. That's not being a good son, and it's not being a good member of this community. Insurance is necessary, and people should start understanding that. So we are bringing up some things about insurance, and we're making those options, information about options available to everybody, because people need to be acting responsibly, and that's part of good business.
You mentioned before that the IFP also works with youth groups, and they offer summer camps. What do these camps cater to? What kinds of opportunities do they offer for kids, and how can parents get their children involved?
Yeah, we do. We have a youth program director here on staff at IFP. We partner with area schools, and we're looking to expand those partnerships. But right now, we're a small staff, and we're operating close to capacity when it comes to our after-school programs. But from, say, three to five, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday afternoons, we've got kids coming here from a variety of schools to learn more about filmmaking. What's really great about our youth programs, I think, is that they really represent the changing demographics of Minnesota. Our kids are 70% kids, students of color. 70% qualify for free or reduced lunch. IFP offers a safe space for people to find their voice, to learn that their stories are matter and are relevant, and to learn the skills to tell those stories. Within those after school courses, we have a lot of ways to get people into the mindset of making films. We'll use poetry sometimes as a way for them to practice, where they create a short film based on a poem, and then work their way up to a group project, and then further down the road, a project of their own that they've created from start to finish. Our in-school residencies tend to be more project-based and take place over the course of a semester. And the schools will help determine what the teachers in those schools will help determine what the and the students as well what product is actually made. Summer camps, it's a long-winded way of getting to your actual question, are different every year. But they run for a couple weeks. They're advertised on our website. They're open to any student anywhere, generally ages 14 to 18. And we offer between 4 and 6 of those every summer for a couple weeks. And they are the topics change. We've done animation. We've done documentaries. We've had them tied to specific themes. But for the most part, we take our tips from schools and from students and from the kids as we move forward and create new topics moving forward. We haven't set our summer coursework for this summer, but we'll be close to doing that. And then also we do work with the Courage Center, and we work with kids and adults with disabilities, and some of that falls into under our summer camp banner as well, because we'll do some targeted shorter-term projects with them.
The Independent Filmmaker Project is also involved with the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Film Festival, which runs this year from April 3rd through the 19th. Let's take a look at the ways in which the IFP is involved in the festival. One of these is the Forecast Public Art Documentaries. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well, Forecast Public Art gives out grants each year to artists to create public art installations in the state. They came to us and asked us if we would be with a desire to document those installations with some short 3 to 5 minute documentaries that talk about the installation, the artist, and we brainstormed about ways that we could create some really interesting content. What we came up with we have so many wonderful filmmakers with great experience who are members of IFP. We could designate 12 team leaders and have them lead a group of young kids who've gone through our youth program and create these documentaries. What's fantastic about it too is we're trying to find a way to bridge kids from the classroom into the workforce. And this we're able to pay them to do this, a small stipend, but whenever you're paid to do something, it's a powerful moment in the development of a career. And then mentorship, just making connections with for kids to learn from professionals and have hands-on experience and be able to see their product projected and in front of an audience is also a powerful moment, and to see their name roll in the credits. So we really looked at it as a teaching moment, but then also to serve forecast needs, obviously really fine content that's created, and that's what the mentor guarantees. So when we had this ready, and we just finished our first year of partnership with Forecast and are really proud of the films, we showed them to the film festival and asked if they would be interested in including them in their lineup, and they jumped at the chance. So we're excited to have it be a part of the festival this year.
You will be moderating one of the panels in the film festival. What are you going to be talking about in that panel?
I also, for the last 7 years, I've been director of programming for a film festival on Cape Cod in Provincetown. And I used to work for the Sundance Film Festival, so I've got some backgrounds in festivals, and many of the films that I've produced or worked on have played many festivals around the country. So when we were talking about some panels, one thing we saw as a need here for the local community was to sort of get a better sense of the festival circuit and the national and the changes that are taking place within film festivals as that speaks to filmmakers and how they're trying to get their works out there. How to make the most of your festival experience, what types of festivals to target for your particular film, how to what you can expect from a film festival, and and all the other related questions that go into this. So we are taking a bit of a focus to regional festivals by including area programmers for some of the many film festivals that take place in town here. But we're also bringing in David Nugent, who is a fixture on the National Film Festival circuit. He is the artistic director of the Hamptons Film Festival, which is one of the premier fall film festivals. And he also teaches. He has taught film at Harvard and also at the New School in New York, where he currently is. He's a documentary filmmaker as well. That has made his work played at MoMA and other museums. He's another one of those people that just has a lot of experience. But in particular, he works for the Hamptons, and he advises a large variety of other film festivals. So we have a nice mix on the panel of people who with a lot of different experience to talk about where festivals fit in to marketing your film, how which festivals are right for your film. How to smartly apply, how to make the most of your experience. So that's generally, and then we'll take a lot of Q&As at the end, so I'm sure it'll go off in a lot of different directions, but just anything and everything related to festivals is really a little bit of a grab bag.
One of the many films being shown at the festival this year is Stay Then Go, which the IFP was a fiscal sponsor for that film. What can you tell me about that picture?
Oh, it's fantastic. It was made by Shelley Ainsworth, produced by Christine Walker and Jeff Sass. They're all Minnesotans, and they're all wonderful, experienced filmmakers. It's a very personal film. Shelley wrote and directed with autism as sort of the main theme, but a very interesting and gripping way that she told the story. I don't want to ruin anything because there are some twists and turns in it. IFP was a fiscal sponsor, so as they were raising funds, they were able to use that tool. And then we help in promoting and the film and doing what we can with other festival consulting about other festivals. Stars Janelle Maloney, who is on the West Wing, and then young actor Matt Kane, who's done a lot of TV work recently. For the most part, he had a recurring arc in the TV series Once Upon a Time for last season. Fantastic cast, and then a lot of really, really awesome local actors round out the cast. It's a powerful film, really artistic, well done, entertaining. I know it'll be sold out, so if people are interested, they should get tickets right away.
Last thing I'd like to ask you, what is it that distinguishes Minnesota's filmmaking community?
I love making films here, and I've been doing it for a very long time. What really distinguishes it for me is I come at it from a perhaps different perspective than most. What you get within a very tight circle around the Twin Cities are two very different looks for urban areas. Very interesting smaller towns and river towns. You have rivers, waterfalls, lakes, farmland. It can double for a lot of different places. And then that's just from a creative perspective. Then from the infrastructure, there are equipment houses, Griffin Lighting, post-production services, animation houses, creative people, a fantastic crew. One of the, and compared to other cities, we've got one of the deepest acting talent pools of anywhere. And then there's just the ease of getting around. If you imagine making a movie in New York or in Boston, it's hard to get around from. If you needed to move from one location to another location for the day with a couple of trucks and actors and everything like that, you're stuck in time away in those other cities. And here, you're good to go. You can be in Stillwater shooting in the morning, and you can be in Minneapolis shooting in the afternoon. And you've done a good job. I just find it very creative. I've also looked at things like, there are a lot of, when you go to the movies, there's a lot of movies that are set in New York and LA, and there's 300 million people who live in between, and I'm really excited that IFP is an organization that helps people tell those stories and get those out there. So I think Minneapolis is set, back in the 90s, Minnesota, the Twin Cities was the fourth largest production market, only behind New York, LA, and Chicago. That was before tax incentives, and right now we're in a big fight to keep our tax incentives in place and grow them so that we can become a leader in the industry again. It's necessary to provide an incentive to Hollywood to go on location and film. And other states like Louisiana and Massachusetts and North Carolina and actually 40 other states provide them. And Minnesota fell behind, and we're catching back up. And I only mention that because, You know, that's, I just told you why I love to shoot here. But back in the 90s, when anybody came here from L.A., New York, or Chicago, everything that I just mentioned, they saw and loved, and they came back over and over again. We live in a special place that offers really great stuff and locations that haven't been seen in the movies for quite a long time, since, you know, Grumpy Old Men, when locations were really, you know, Minnesota locations up on the screen. So IFP is a part of trying to rebuild this film industry to the levels that we were in the 90s, and to not just support Minnesota filmmakers, but any independent filmmaker that wants to come here. We had two independent films, Dear White People and Kimiko the Treasure Hunter, which both played at the Sundance Film Festival in competition this last January. Both of them shot in Minnesota. They were supported by the Minnesota Film and TV Board, and also by IFP. Dear White People cut their film, edited their film at our facility, because we have editing facilities as part of our classroom equipment. And so we're here for Minnesota. We're here to promote Minnesota, but we're here for independent filmmakers. And if somebody from another state wants to make a Minnesota story and come here, we're here to help them.
That concludes this edition of Hollywood Minnesota. Thank you to Andrew Peterson for speaking with me today. You can find out more about the Minneapolis-St. Paul Film Festival online at mspfilm.org. And you can find out more about the Independent Filmmaker Project at ifpmn.org. This program is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I'm Nathan Wardinsky, and be sure to join me next week for another edition of Hollywood, Minnesota.